B-Pod Studios.
All right, it's the 4 o'clock hour of the Mike and Snelly Show. It's 4 o'clock hour is very special for a number of reasons, not the least of which is we have our guy Brian Westbrook sharing the microphone from 4 to 5, brought to us by Landis Block. You get your jaw-dropping backyard paradise, and you can do it online at landisbc.com. They also bring us the 4 o'clock hour, so let's welcome in the great number 36, Brian Westbrook. What's up, B-West?
Good, Mike, good afternoon. I am so excited about our Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, you liked that game last night, huh?
I liked that game for a lot of different reasons. Of course, I liked it because they're beating up on Brooklyn, and I happened to be able to go to the game. So it was a great
game. Oh, you were at the game last night?
I was at the game last night. So it was great to see the Sixers continue to win, of course. So I'm at the game early. You know, the game started at 8. I was there at 6:45 just getting the food and, you know, getting something to drink before the game, getting ready, getting my mindset ready. And I'm watching the guys warm up, And I hear whispers that Embiid isn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I talked to one of the guys on the team, like, yeah, Joel's not playing. And I'm like, what? I'm going crazy because I'm thinking in my mind, there's no chance that they're going to win this game. First game in Brooklyn and
yeah,
the home crowd behind them. And, I didn't think that they can win without Joel. But to see the way this thing turned out from the very beginning of the game, it was just great to see.
I was waiting for you to get some national TV time then if you were at the ball game last night.
I was low-key.
You were staying low-key?
Yeah, low-key, hat on, down nice and low. Just wanted to hang out and enjoy the game. I didn't want to be a celebrity. Wanted to enjoy the game.
All right, so NBC Sports Philadelphia would have been nice to get you on there and, Pete Brian Westbrook in the audience represent Philadelphia.
That's right.
All right, so they'll explain to me, since you're an athlete that's gone through the wars, explain to me Ben Simmons. Because, game one, you form an opinion, and then game two, he comes out, he plays well, and then game three, he busted out in game three. He's perplexing to me. Can you explain him?
Yeah. No, I'm perplexed just as much as you. The only thing I could think of, and I think this actually probably is that Ben has been so good throughout his life. And I'm not just talking about NBA career, college career,
mm-hmm,
high school. He's been the best player on the floor pretty much every time he touched the floor, probably until he got to the pros. And I think that when you're the best player almost all the time, you go through times where you get bored. And you just defer, just because you don't, maybe you don't have it that night, or maybe you just don't feel like it that night. And you feel like there is a light switch where you can turn it on and off. And I think when you compare that mindset to the mindset of some of the greats, we're talking about the greats, Jordan and Kobe and, those types of greats, they have it all the time. That they have the mindset that I want to be the best player on the floor every day, every minute of every game, every practice, and I want to show people that I'm better than them all the time. And I think that's something that Ben will have to develop. He'll have to grow into. He'll have to mature into. And that means consistency every single time. There's no days off. There's no lackadaisical games. And I think when you look at the last two games, you've seen an aggressive attitude, an aggressive mindset from Ben Simmons. And that starts at the very beginning of the game. You can tell from the opening tip,
mm-hmm,
opening possession, he's going to the basket. He's aggressive. He's intent on making sure that his presence is known throughout the game. And it's a totally different basketball team when that happens.
He seems like a guy who needs an artificial fire. Like after game one with the booze, he took the booze to heart because he did make a cryptic comment after the game. And then during game two, he cupped his ear saying, boo me now. And then yesterday, the artificial fire was Jared Dudley saying he was an average half-court player. You been around guys like that?
I have been around guys like that that need that fire. And I'll say this, and I think T.O. was a great talent. However, I think he was one of those guys that needed that fire. I remember the second year T.O. was here, and I was holding out of camp. So they were telling me these stories. And then when I got there, I confirmed it with T. But at that point, they had talked, some coaches had said some bad things about him in the press and things like that, or some things that he considered bad. And so he took those clippings, and every single morning of training camp, every single morning he woke up at Lehigh, he would read those press clippings. And that's how he would start his day. That's how he would get on fire every single day, to either be pissed off at the coaches or just to go out there and deal with the media or just go out to practice every single day. His goal was to shut people up. His goal was to make sure that his presence was felt. And that, I kind of feel that way about Ben. I mean, he's so gifted that that's why people are upset, because they're saying, hey, he doesn't have a jump shot. You know, he could be the best ever, but he has to have a jump shot. That's why people are frustrated with Ben Simmons. They see the potential. They see nights like last night in game two, and they say, well, if he can just do that and he adds another 6 to 8 points a night off of a foul line jump shots or floaters in the lane, then we're talking about an MVP candidate. And that's what the type of skill set he has. You know, I think over time that he develops that killer instinct all the time. But if he can develop it over the next couple games here in the playoffs, I start to get that, okay, you know what? When the lights are on, he'll play the best, and hopefully we can get that from Ben.
So the theory is that the guy is so good, the athletes could be so good, and it comes so easy to them, that they almost need something else to bring out the really best of them. Because they know, they already know they're good, and it's like you need something else to bring you up to the top, really to the top floor.
Absolutely. You know, it's weird, and here's the other contrast. So I never was the best athlete on my team. I never was the best player, probably except for my last couple years at Villanova. But in the NFL, there are other guys, NBA, the professional sports, there's other guys that are never the best, but the only thing that they have is the attitude, the mindset that makes them work harder and do more. I think of guys like Jerry Rice. He was probably the best receiver in that he played. That played while he was playing, but in college, they didn't think he was the best. That's why he went to a small school. Probably in high school, he wasn't the best. That's why he went to a small school. So he developed a mindset that said, I'm going to be better than you. I'm going to outwork you all the time because I'm not considered the best. Ben really didn't have to have that problem. Mm-hmm. He never dealt with that because he was always the best. And I think that also goes a long way to explaining why he doesn't have a jump shot right now. Because if I'm the best, why am I working on my weaknesses? That's what some guys think.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why Ben never worked on that jump shot.
Yeah, there's something definitely to that. All right, so how do you see the rest of this series? And did the Sixers do anything last night to you to make you think that they'll now be Toronto? Now they play without Embiid, and they played very well without Embiid. So the dynamic now that you have to examine is how different will they be when Embiid comes back? So what do you see here coming up in the future?
Well, I think it certainly is a different type of game when Joel Embiid is in the game. I mean, you're trying to get him 15 shots a night. And it's different from the shots that, Bobby was getting, different from the shots that Moreau was getting. It was late in the shot clock options for both of those guys, last resort type of options. And Bobby actually making some layups. He's dunking off of his tiptoes, which is kind of hilarious to me. But Embiid, he's the number one option. So the game takes a different flow. The game certainly takes a different mental approach when you have Joel Embiid not there, because now Ben is saying, I'm the man. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go get mine.
Yep.
And it's kind of weird. I think that, you know, before I even answer your question, I think Brett Brown deserves a lot of credit, too. I mean, I really, really do. We get on him all the time. I think he deserves some credit for having Jimmy bring the ball up and have Ben on the block on the same side. And then you run J.J. off 35 picks to get wide-open jump shots. I mean, there was times, especially at the end of the season, I'm wondering, do they have any set plays? And then you talk about game three, you know, J.J. is wide open on most of his shots. I mean, it was amazing how much space he was getting for a good shooter, a great shooter. He was getting wide-open looks. That's because of the play of Ben and his aggressiveness. That's because of the threat of Jimmy. And, of course, Coach Brown running a bunch of plays to get J.J. great shots, great looks. That's something that coaches do. And we talked about the continuity and things like that. I think they just did a really good job. But your question is, can they do it, you know, and compete against Toronto? I think they can. I think that if they can find a way, and this is weird because a lot of people are thinking, well, you know what? You know, they did it last night without Embiid. Maybe they should trade Embiid and get some good players and win that way. And that's never was my thought. My thought is, okay, how could they find a way to play the way that they played up and down the floor last night, offense really going through Jimmy and Ben, and still find a way to integrate Joel in there? That's the thought that I have.
Yeah.
And if you can find a way to do that, then I think you have a shot against Toronto. I think you also have a shot against Milwaukee, too. Because, again, you have the best starting five, one of the best starting five in the league. If you can get everyone hitting on the same on cylinders in the same game, I think you have a chance to win a lot of basketball games.
All right, let's get to the phones. I want to, obviously, we have some football issues to talk about with you as well. Dave in Center City wanted to hang on to just directly speak to you. Dave, you're on with Brian Westbrook.
Hey, firstly, happy Easter to all our listeners and their families, to the 97.5 family and their families, and to Brian Westbrook and his family.
Thank you, Dave.
Riddle of the day. What do Eldrick Tiger Woods and Brian Collins Westbrook have in common?
They're both great golfers.
Oh, my God, you're very close. They both are great, and if it weren't for injuries, both of them would be the greatest. Brian, I prorated some of your stats, assuming you did not get injured, okay? You would have finished with 12,000 rushing yards, 8,000 receiving yards. You know where that would have put you at? A hair behind Emmitt and Walter Payton.
Well, I appreciate you doing it. Now I can make the argument for the Hall of Fame. I appreciate that.
You should have sucked it up and played a couple more years then.
That's not true!
Hey, listen, by the way, there's nothing wrong with Ben Simmons partying the night before a game. In the late 80s, there was a Center City club called Live Bait, and I'm sure Mikey Miss was a regular there. Every local and visiting sports figure was there. My buddy owned the place. So I was one of the chosen few that could stay there after closing. Colorado Rockies were in town. Brian Buchanan, who was a starting pitcher for them, him and I closed the place. These two girls drop him off at 6 in the morning at the stadium hotel, drop me off. I proceed to go to sleep for 2 days. You know what Buchanan proceeded to do? Pitch 6 shutout innings against the Phillies in 89-degree heat. You guys have a good weekend.
Dave celebrity story. Center City celebrity Dave. I don't know if any of this stuff that he tells us is true, but who knows? He knows how to tell it. He knows how to spin a yarn.
I don't think he'd make it up.
Well, him and Vicente both have, they compete for stories.
They really do.
Ironically, they both have been in studio on TV.
Uh-huh.
Vicente and Dave.
How about that? All right, let's go to Dave in Audubon. Dave, you're on 97.5 Fanatic. Dave.
Mikey Miss, how you doing?
What's up, Dave?
Not much. Thanks for taking my call, as
my
always.
Pleasure.
I just want to talk a little Sixers. Great win last night, especially with arguably our best player not on the court. I think there's been points within the season where Tobias, Jimmy, and Ben have all, you know, perplexed us, where you know what they're physically capable of, mm-hmm. but they just don't come through. But this series, I think if they find a way to play the way that they did last night, and you add in Embiid into that equation, look out.
Well, but again, you have to see. I don't know that they could play the same way with Embiid there, because
you think. Well, I mean, I'm about to fly out to Toronto and start putting out missing posters on the telephone poles.
For who? Oh, for Ben.
Well, for whoever. His incentive. But
yeah.
I just think the talent, if they can play the way they did last night.
Yeah, well, they knew they had to step it up without Embiid, right? And you know that the spacing is going to be a lot different when Embiid's on the floor. And then he's going to have to, as Brian said before, he's going to have to get his shots, which is going to reduce shots for a guy like Tobias Harris, who took a lot yesterday. Butler was more of a facilitator than anything. So Simmons did play well with Embiid in game two. So I don't have any worries about that. I worry about Tobias Harris, because he didn't show that kind of spunk with Embiid on the floor.
Would you, if they continue to win, would you play? Like, I would sit Embiid until they lost. Is that And
well, you got to worry about his conditioning. So if you're going to sit him, you know that he's going to lose some conditioning. Right, Dave? You got to get in basketball shape. You got to get up and down the floor, get your wind right. If you sit out, yeah, you're resting your knee, but your cardio suffers.
Yeah, I mean, I think Embiid's weight and the conditioning will be an issue. And we talked about it a little bit last week when you're out. I think that's going to be an issue throughout the entire playoffs, and especially as they continue to rest him. Mm-hmm. He can get you 30 one night. It's going to be what happens the next couple nights. That's the big thing for him. You know, I think it still brings up a great question. If you haven't injured or slowed at least Embiid, Joel Embiid, how can this offense be most effective? How can this team be most effective? Is it still trying to go through Embiid to get, you know, 15, you know, 16, 17 shots a night? You know, and it's Brett Brown's job at this point to try to figure out what's the most effective team. It's long been my belief, and I tell Tyrone this all the time, that the big man position, not that it's obsolete, it's just not as important.
Yeah, I get you. So what are you suggesting here?
Well, I'm
like you're suggesting keep him out of the lineup.
No. Not that.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is we have to lower his shot count because he dominates the ball so much. In this offense, the way that they want to run things, they have three or four guys on the perimeter that can get their own shot, that can make good shots, at least deep. And I think Ben, starting on the left side, running to the right, did that hook last night. I think this gives this offense a better chance to win in the long run than trying to throw the ball into B for 15 times a night. I don't know that that's how you can be successful in the long run in today's
game. I got you. I think they can work some stuff with Embiid up top with Simmons like they were doing last night, where they were getting some screen and rolls and they were getting them down low on the block to score. They should still be able to do that with Embiid on the floor. So we'll see what happens. By the way, a couple open lines. You can get in right now. I'll talk to Brian Westbrook, 610-620-975. You have not mentioned yet the great Masters victory by Tiger Woods. Knowing that I have eaten crow for several days after having predicted that he would never win another major. So I'm going to give you your opportunity now.
A crying moment for a lot of golf fans around the world. Nat, did you cry when Tiger won? My son is looking at me, and he's wondering why I'm tearing up.
You were tearing up.
Wow.
You were tearing up at the emotions of the victory.
I was a little emotional, but I actually didn't tear up crying.
When he hugged his children and everybody?
Yes.
That part of it?
I told my son, we did it. And he's looking at me crazy because he's chewing like, Dad, what's wrong with you? It's good to see Tiger come back when everyone doubted him. And to me, to hear the underdog type of story, I think we love that, especially in Philadelphia.
I don't know if everyone doubted him. I doubted him. I think everyone thought that he was going to win.
I think everyone that had has seen, you know, he's had gotten better every time he played a major this year, you know, but I think that he hadn't won in a long time. So people doubt, not everyone, of course, not literally everyone, but a lot of people, majority of people doubted Tiger to see the way that he played. But also, even more than that, to see the way Molinari crumbled down the end, down the last couple holes, that was a Tiger Woods.
Man, why you got to pick on the Italian?
Crumbled.
Why you got to be so excited about it? listen, I you haven't heard me tell the story, but I think that I had something to do with Tiger winning, and I will, you've known that I have not been a big fan. So on Thursday, I was on the Masters grounds, and he was coming off 18, and there was hardly any people that were coming off the 18 as he was walking from the 18th green to Butler Cabin. And I was there in, kind of in the alley where the golfers and the caddies were walking, and made eye contact with him and swallowed my pride and gave him a little head nod. And he in turn gave me a return head nod. And I think in that moment, that may have freed him up.
You know what it is?
Mentally.
Ben Simmons needed that missing poster and Jared Dudley saying that. Tiger Woods needed Mike Missanelli.
Just a little minor head nod. Just, a little underscored.
A little something.
Yeah, just a little something.
A show of respect.
That's it was a show of respect. I mean, like I said, I respect him. I didn't necessarily like him, but I respected him.
Well, why don't people like Tiger? I just don't understand. Why don't people like Tiger?
Come on, he's been a miserable car.
Well, yeah.
His whole life. He's been aloof. He's been detached.
Because
golf
is a mental game. How do you be the best if you're not mentally sharper than everybody else? You can't. How would you expect him to be if golf you have to be so mentally...
Yeah, be a professional, man. You can't be throwing clubs and cursing.
Oh, man, he's focused. He's focused. Everybody wants someone to be focused. We're talking about Ben Simmons being focused. But when I'm laser focused only on my craft, now people like you, you have problems with Tiger because of that. That's crazy.
No, I think you got to be congenial also a little bit when you're a golfer.
No, he's out there trying to win. That's why he's the best golfer ever, because it's a mental game.
All right.
You wanted to meet Mr. Social Pants. And
no, I don't want to be Mr. Social Pants. I just want him to acknowledge that there are other people that actually exist on the earth other than him. That's basically all I wanted.
Those people, and that's why he got in trouble with his wife. That's why. He acknowledged the people that he wanted to.
Yeah, well, you know, that was his world. I'm not even talking about that part of it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the Sixers and some Eagle questions for Brian Westbrook about Carson Wentz, among other things. We're back at this, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
All right, let's do an update for our Twitter poll. It's 4:30 on the Mike Misnelli Show. Twitter poll is brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons. We have two Twitter polls.
Yes, we do. The second one's a real gas.
Yes, it is. It's a stone gas. Yeah.
All right, poll number one has over 3,100 votes on it. Do you still want to trade Ben Simmons? 15% say yes, it's only the Nets. 85% say no, generational player. And then poll number two, they say whoever smelt it, dealt it, who dealt it. Over 1,600 votes on this one. 10% going Zaire Smith, 34% say Joel Embiid, 45% say Amir Johnson, and 11% go Jonathan Simmons. So Amir Johnson's still leading the poll. Everybody thinks he dealt it.
Let's educate Brian on this. He may not know because he was at the game. Brian, last night there was a video of the Sixers bench. At the end of the bench, where Edmund Embiid was sitting next to Amir Johnson, and Joel turned to Amir and said, "You can read his lips. Did you fart?" And they start covering up their nose. There were four guys that on the end of the bench start covering up their nose. Zaire Smith was one of them, and Jonathan Simmons was the other.
Mm-hmm,
so our poll was, who actually delivered it.
That's a good question. I usually go by the philosophy whoever starts to ask the question, like, hey, did you fart? They probably smelled it first. Are the guy that did it.
Exactly. So it was probably Embiid.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. No way. He probably dealt it.
It was Amir.
Yeah, it was Amir? Amir shook his head no.
I feel like Joel would own it if he did it.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like the type who would just pass the...
Well,
Amir's sitting stoic as the other three
guys. This happens in sports with teams and locker rooms stuff like that. All right, Brian.
Anybody
ever do it in a huddle?
Listen, not in the huddle, because usually, we're trying to be serious in there, but during meetings, oh no. Ask Trey Thomas. Trey Thomas was lethal during meetings. For some of these offensive linemen, Sean Andrews and Trey and... these guys,
they're
350 pounds for a reason. They get out.
Oh, no, Trey.
Yeah,
Trey slandered. All right, let's talk a couple football issues here. Carson Wentz addressed the media last week and said he's not quite healed. Is there an alarm that goes off in your head over this, or is it no big deal and there's still 4 months to go before you actually play a game?
Absolutely. A huge alarm.
It is an alarm to you.
And here's the reason why. The big concern with Carson, of course, is going to be himself. We know his health. We know that when healthy, he's a dynamic player, MVP type of candidate. Can he remain healthy based on his the style of play? That's the big question. And when you're telling me you know, 3 months or so after, 4 months or so after you played your last game, that you're still not healthy, that concerns me just a bit. I remember like it was yesterday, towards the end of my career, there were years where I wasn't healthy until May. And it was just a matter of time that I re-aggravated an injury, and I wasn't healthy again. And that happened in August. Carson's playing style says he wants to move the pocket. He was going to scramble around a little bit based on what he was doing his first 3 years in the league. And that causes quarterbacks to get hit. You have a bad back. It doesn't take a bunch to re-injure a bad back. And because it wasn't a quick recovery, I'm very concerned. And I'm wondering why, if it's bone, why it hasn't healed already. Yeah. If it's muscular, why it hasn't healed. What's the reason? What's keeping it from healing? Is it working out? If it's working out, then he should stop. Obviously, we know that. But if he stops working out, how is that continuity with him and the wide receivers, him and Deshaun Jackson, him and Alshon, how does that improve? These are big-time questions. An important year for Carson Wentz, obviously contract year, you know, opportunity for him to get that contract renewed. But I think that, you know, for the team, you have to make some decisions too. Do we try to, you know, offer him something now and try to get him cheaper? Or do we wait and see if how injured he'll be this season, or lack of injury, which is our hope? I mean, those are big-time questions that have to be answered. And when you tell me you haven't done anything to re-injure it, why are you still hurt at this point in the offseason?
Mm. Okay.
Big-time question.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Ed in Wilmington. Ed, you're on 97.5 Fanatic. Ed.
Mike and Brian, it's a privilege.
What's going on, Ed? How you doing?
Pretty good. I was trying to think of a quarterback historically that had a bad back. I couldn't come up with one on the fly there. You know, somebody.
Well, Romo had one.
There you go, Romo. Yep.
Yeah, he played through a lot of injuries. Yeah, at the end of his career, he did play through a lot of back injuries as well.
Well, if Carson can play, I think they win 10-plus games looking at their schedule.
Yeah.
And not breaking down every game. I think they're a 10-plus team. With this schedule.
Yeah, Brian, I want to do that with you as well. We look at the schedule. We'll go through every game.
And I'll just circle back to the Sixers real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrone made a real good point about getting Joel Embiid involved against Brooklyn Nets, but I'd be tempted to sit him for the rest of the series until we win it and bring him in against whatever the next team is.
It's going to be Toronto.
Right.
Yeah. So you would,
I'd be tempted to sit.
You would, but you know, you got to worry about his shape now. You got to worry about his physical condition.
Right. 240 or whatever. I know the load management. That's, you know, the buzzwords this year. But I think they can beat that team without him. Mm-hmm. And I also think that Ben is playing so much better in the paint laterally around the rim.
Yeah. Well, he is. There's no question. The last two games have been magnificent for Ben Simmons. He did play with Embiid in game two, so you can't just say like that freed him up because Embiid wasn't on the floor and opened things for him in game three. Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm thinking? You know, if you rest him, this team continues to play without him. They kind of get used to that running up and down the floor, different style of basketball at that point. One of the big questions, especially at the end of the year, is how do these guys create any continuity if they don't play together? It's a totally different basketball game when Joel is in the game. And if you continue to sit him out, you're going to need him to play to win that second-round series. So if you continue to sit him out, how do they ever get that playoff continuity?
Yeah, that's true.
The game speeds up. I mean, it's a different game.
It's true.
I would be surprised if they do that.
It's the rock and the hard place dilemma.
Yeah.
All right.
Does the rest, how much does the rest help him compared to how much it hurts him? And the team.
Exactly. All right, let's get to the schedule, Brian, because I want to do this with you. A lot of people think this is silly. We hear from a guy yesterday on Sound Off who said, why are you guys wasting time picking winners when you know that it's anything can happen in a game? And we know, but we're just trying to have a little fun here. And this is just for fun purposes only. Both Tyrone and I had 11-5 originally. I may have gone down to 10-6 because of one game that I think could be problematic, and it's a Seattle game. Let's go with Brian Westbrook here as we look at each of these games. You tell me win or loss. First game, Washington, Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. game.
Big time win is to start the season. and your division play, a big time win against the Redskins, who, you know, they're going to struggle all season long.
Okay.
And funny, ironically, I was at a Dr. Oz event earlier on in the week, and they ran into Josh Norman. And I was just asking him about this quarterback situation, and I basically said this: you can't win without a quarterback. And he was like, oh my God, how does everybody else know this except for our ownership and management? And I'm like, wow, okay, that kind of shows you where they're at. Yeah, you know, big time beatdown of the Redskins early on in the season.
All right, at Atlanta, Sunday night, game two.
You know, my first instinct is to say that that's a win. But, going to Atlanta, they're still going to have Julio, a healthy Julio. I think, you know, they have some young receivers that can play. I think you get Freeman back. And so I think it's a little bit different team than we've played these last couple of years. I think there's going to be a tough game on the road. I'm assuming that Carson is healthy going into the preseason and healthy through that first game. I still think this is a tough one on the road in Atlanta. I have them as a loss.
All right, Detroit at home the following Sunday at 1 p.m.
You know, Detroit has an offense that can score some points when healthy. A couple of their receivers got hurt last year. I think this is a good game, good test for our secondary, especially coming off a game against Atlanta when Julio, you know, you have that factor in the game. I still think offensively we're a better team. We can score more points than the Lions. We win that game.
There's a big one at Green Bay, Thursday night football.
Short week traveling. I think new coach out there. I think we win that game.
Win in Green Bay. I thought you were going to go the other way with it.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I still think there's some issues out there in Green Bay. And mm-hmm. I wonder how the team responds to Aaron Rodgers and all the offseason stuff.
All right.
So I think we found a way to win that.
All right. Jets home.
Win.
All right. At Minnesota.
I'm perplexed by this Vikings team. I thought offensively they would have been better. They fired an offensive coordinator. They have some talent there. I think they're still sour from that game a couple of years ago.
Revenge.
At the NFC title.
Revenge situation.
Yeah, I think it's a revenge situation. I think we lose that
one. Okay, all right. So now you got the Eagles right now 4-2, and they go to Dallas on a Sunday night.
I think we win that one. Come back with a win.
Come back with a win, 5-2 at Buffalo, third straight game on the road.
I think a lot of it is going to depend on the play of Josh Allen. He was running a bunch last year. That's why they won some games towards the end. LeSean McCoy, you know, veteran running back that continues to get it done. I don't think their offensive line is very good up there in Buffalo, and their defense struggles because of that offense.
All right, that's a win, 6-2. Yep. Quickly, as we go to the break, let's do these quickly. Chicago Bears.
Win.
That is 7-2 for Westbrook. New England. After the bye.
Loss.
All right, that's 7-3. Seattle Sunday night.
Where's that game at? In Philly?
The game's in Philly.
Russell Wilson. Coming off New England. I'm going to go loss there.
You're going to go loss. Two straight losses.
Yep.
7-4. Miami.
Win.
That's 8-4. Giants Monday Night Football.
Win.
That's 9-4 at Washington.
Win.
That's 10-4 with two left. Dallas at home.
I think you lose to Dallas. I think you'll split. You'll end up splitting the series with Dallas.
All right, that's 10-5, and the Giants win, right?
I would say win. Really, that game is going to basically be dependent on how much you need to win, and I don't think you're going to need that win to win the division.
All right, so you got 11-5 when all said and done. 11-5, which is the most popular prediction. 11-5 for this schedule.
Yeah,
I think our team is
in good shape. I think those division games. I have them going 5-1 in the division, and that's the backbone of your schedule.
All right,
I think they found a way to win 5 at least in the division.
All right, 11-5 goes Westbrook. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I want to ask you also. We'll take some calls, but I also want to ask you about this Kate Smith controversy with the Yankees and the Flyers have just done regarding Kate Smith's recording of God Bless America. It's the Mike Mussinelli Show. Brian Westbrook till 5 o'clock with us. Back after this on 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Yeah, 448, Mike Mussinelli Show, 97.5, the Fanatic NBC Sports Philadelphia. Just a few more minutes that I left with Brian Westbrook. Brian, I wanted to get your opinion. I know you've read this story, this Kate Smith story. Now, the Yankees used to use Kate Smith, the seventh inning stretching, God Bless America. The Flyers have used it for years as their kind of anthem before games. And now it turns out that research has gone back in time to see some songs that she recorded were obviously looked at today as stone racist. What is your view on the Flyers subsequently covered the statue and will no longer play the song, and the Yankees did it the day before?
Of course. Man, that's a no-brainer. Of course. Why would you want to play a song that's racist, especially when you're trying to get all different types of races to come into your building and support your brand? And they, of course, that's what you have to do. This is an easy and a no-brainer.
So, the counter argument that people have fostered, and I've gotten a lot of emails on it, is that at the time she's doing it, she is unaware that it's racist, and that actually the climate of the day is that it is just a regular occurrence and not racist.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I believe that she may not have looked at it as racist, and because back then, you know, it wasn't viewed in that way. Yeah, that may absolutely be the case, but that doesn't make it acceptable today for us.
Right, so you have to look at it through today's lens is what you're saying.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there were times when you know, there were men that felt women should only stay in the kitchen and be barefoot and pregnant.
Yep.
And I dare you to go tell my wife that.
Yep.
I'll be lucky to get a home-cooked meal once or twice a week. You know, she has a pregnant part down. We're done with that. But, yeah, the home-cooked meal, they're cooking. No, that's not happening. So, yeah, the times have changed. Things are different now. You have to look at them through a different lens.
Once you find out, I mean, it may not have been her fault because she was unaware, because the climate of the day was that black people didn't have the power to speak up and were subject to this without us even thinking about it. The lens of today pollutes her.
Well, we're smarter today. We're progressive. We've changed. We've challenged a lot of old traditions and old thought processes. We're different now. And we can't be going backwards and allow something that has happened in the past to continue, something that we now know is wrong. I think that a lot of people that don't have a problem with it may not view it as wrong. And, you know, it's hard for me to understand that. We understand now how racism is absolutely wrong, and we have to treat everything that has racism in it or around it as such. We can't be surrounded by it. It's a simple and easy decision.
All right, that's... talk about the NFL draft quickly, and then maybe we can squeeze a call in here. The NFL draft, there was a mock draft last night, Kuiper and Todd McShay, and they had the Eagles take a defensive tackle from Ole Miss. You think that's the way it's going to play out? They will get a defensive tackle, or they will trade back with their first pick?
I think offensive line, defensive line. I mean, it's going to be an offensive, defensive line, but I could certainly see them trading back to try to pick up some picks because, again, I think they have some depth issues in a lot of positions. They have some older players and in some key positions, and they have to fulfill those holes. With the hope that Jason Peters and Rodney McLeod and, you know, you find ways to get these older players, Malcolm Jenkins, to come back and play at a top level, high level. We need that to be successful. But you also need that depth to start building for the future. And, again, I never wanted our organization to be a one-win Super Bowl type of team. I always wanted them to be building something so that we can have some longevity here. We have to start hitting with some of these draft picks to build that type of longevity, the winning culture that we want to go along with Carson, things like that. These drafts, especially now, will be key.
All right, let's go quickly. You, Eric in Hatboro. Eric, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Mike, you missed B. West. What's going on?
How you doing, Eric?
What's up, Eric? Good. I got 2 points, Mike. The first one is, I want you to tell me if this is a violation. I went up to the game last night in Brooklyn, and so halftime rolls around. I'm waiting in line. I get to the front, right, and I order my food, and I give the lady my cash. She tells me, no, we don't accept this, right? I thought she was joking around.
Uh-huh.
Here, the Barclays Center doesn't accept cash.
Really?
Is that not a complete violation?
Yeah, well, they're going paperless anymore.
That's a violation.
Yeah, nobody carries cash anymore anyway.
Nobody
carries cash, so I guess they figure if nobody's carrying cash, then that's streamlined a little bit.
Yeah. I know, but
they want to make sure that all their money goes into the register as well. That's
yeah, I get it. I get it.
Right, all right. And another thing, I think what B. West said, we got to give Brett Brown credit. I think he has made a ton of adjustments. And one thing that bothered me during the regular season was the pick and roll defense and how they would switch every screen on the ball, whether it was a hard screen set or the guy didn't even touch them. And they'd switch it, and it would just create matchup problems. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that this postseason.
Yeah. No, you're right, man. Good call.
That's how the NBA is going. Quick, I know we got to go. One of the things that I like what the Sixers are doing now, and of course you're trying to attack the basket with Ben, that low pick that they're running basically in the lane, almost on the dotted line in the lane, to get him freed up 3-4 feet away from the basket, that is something that certainly should be used even more. That allows him to get a running start, get the pick, and then he can hit that little right-hand floater that he loves going from left to right.
All right, tomorrow afternoon, we'll see the Sixers win another one. Brian,
another big win.
Yep, another big win. Have a great weekend, man, and we'll talk to you.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, there you go. Brian Westbrook joining us every Thursday. Last night's game, did you see what they had Tobias mocked up? And he yells, "I see you, JJ. You got that good home cooked meal last night."
Nah, because I was watching on NBC Sports Philly.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was flipping around. But yeah. But I caught that. They had him mic'd.
Oh, they did. Yeah. Well,
yeah. And because he lives in Brooklyn. See?
Yeah, I know JJ lives in Brooklyn. He like walked
to
the game.
Yeah, that's where his home cooked meal came from.
So we have another one tomorrow.
Exactly.
A little lunch.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
610-622-0975. 5 o'clock hours ahead right here. 975 Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.